Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Campionato di calcio italiano.
Good evening, hello, and welcome back to the latest Forza Italian Football Podcast. As always, I am your host, Connor Clancy, and I have a familiar face and a new face joining me this week. The familiar one, and voice for those of you listening, is Vito Doria. Vito, hello.
Hello, Connor.
How are you keeping, mate?
Just the usual with me, nothing out of the ordinary, another week of Serie A.
That grunt the listeners can take from that Sampdoria's result wasn't too favourable for you this week. But hopefully we do have someone here who can lighten your mood a bit, because we've got debutant Ben Hughes. Ben, you are FIF's Sardinian resident. It's nice to have you on the pod.
Hello guys, hello everyone. Yeah, it's nice to make it on. Trying my best to enjoy the football here in Sardinia, and I think Cagliari are making that pretty easy for me at the moment. So, unlike Vito, I'm having an easy ride of it.
Yeah, absolutely you are. Do you know what? Let's completely break from tradition, given the occasion, Ben. And we'll start with Cagliari. I was at their game this week. They were here in Emilia-Romagna to play Sassuolo in my favourite little town of Reggio Emilia. And it looked really, really concerning for them. They were 2-0 down at halftime. They were playing terribly. Sassuolo were quite on their game. But Cagliari showed a real fight. They fought back, got a last-minute equaliser, 2-2. They're now in the top four. What's the atmosphere in Sardinia like with Cagliari doing this?
It's interesting, you know, because they seem to have this never-say-die attitude, this bounce-back ability. I think it's something that people didn't expect, obviously, after losing Nicolò Barella last year. And having watched him myself, you know, the way he ran the game for them, he was last season was really probably in the end the person that kept them up. I mean, they were in a bit of a scrap down there, and when they needed a bit of class on the ball, you know, he was the guy that was head and shoulders above the rest of them. But then, like, to lose him, and people are thinking, like, what's going to happen now? This is only going one way. And astute signings. And of course, you know, now the key man, Raja, the ninja, is running the show. I think you'll agree with that. I mean, he's on 5 assists, I think. Got himself, what, like 6 goals? 5 or 6 goals?
Even the first half, he was the only Cagliari player that was actually doing something on Sunday. And you could see that he was kind of that level above everyone else. But what really strikes me about this Cagliari team is you look at them individually. And like I said, they lost arguably their best player. If Barella was still there this year, he would still possibly be their best player. And they don't have many really outstanding talents. You've got Giovanni Simeone, who might be the biggest name aside from Nainggolan. And he was kind of shipped out of Fiorentina. But just so good as a unit. They remind me a little bit of that Atalanta team from 3 years ago. But they got that superstar in Nainggolan in there. And is Nainggolan that much help to all of his teammates to just that he elevate them a little bit?
Well, yeah, I think from my point of view, you know, when I'm at the ground, I can see him rallying the guys. It just seems to give everyone a lift. You know, when he's on the ball, there's that extra expectation. You know, when his name's read out before the game, it obviously brings the loudest cheer. He's the talisman now. But I think what's important is the fact that you've got Rog, Nandez and Chigarini behind him, willing to do all of the dirty work, let's say, which allows him to then, you know, get on the ball in and around the box and do what he's been doing, unleashing these shots. And so far, so good. I mean, they're flying in the top corner. He's got a goal of the season contender already. And everything is turning to gold for him. As for Simeone, I agree. When he came in, it was kind of like a dubious one. People were thinking, well, you know, what's he going to do for us? But again, he's running off the shoulder of the last defender. He's making things difficult. And when they come together as a unit, they're really solid. They're really compact. And no, he definitely gives them the edge, Nainggolan. Definitely.
Yeah. I'll throw it over to you, Vito. You've been sitting patiently and quietly there. Cagliari are already on 29 points. They've won 8 games. Last season, they won 10 games and finished on 41 points. So already, after 15 games, they're only 12 points shy of their tally from last season. How much longer can this actually continue for?
It's not easy to make a prediction in these circumstances, but based on the way they've been playing so far and also on some of the individuals that they've had there, I don't think they would drop off too much, to be honest. I don't think in the second half of the season they'll drop off so badly that they would get caught up in the relegation battle. I think the Champions League might be a bit of a stretch considering what they have in their squad at the moment and also what some of the other sides have. And we also need to consider if some of the other sides change their coaches soon. With what they do have now, though, is that they're still playing very good football. You have Nainggolan there, who's been fantastic, but most of the others, like Ben mentioned, like Rog, Chigarini, they've been playing well. Pizzicane has been playing well in defence. Pellegrini makes a lot of runs from left back. And João Pedro is having the best season of his career too. Robin Olsen, much more this year, he's been doing well in place of Alessio Cranio. And without Cranio and Pavoletti, they're getting results. So I think in the second half of the season, if they can get one of those two back or both, I think that would be very good for Rolando Maran. And hopefully having those two guys could, you know, sustain any sort of progress in the second half of the season.
You have to think it would take something quite remarkable for them to not finish in the top 10, right? But I almost feel a bit disrespectful speaking about them in those sorts of terms, because I was the first person on here those years ago when Gasperini first came in at Atalanta saying, you can't write them off. You can't write them off. Look, they're doing it. So same logic must be applied to Cagliari. And as long as they keep doing this, they've only lost 2 games. I mean, that's the same number as last year. It's only one more than Juve. To lose 2 games, their draw at Sassuolo made them unbeaten in 13, which is something they hadn't done since 1972. And Ben, is the belief growing week on week at the stadium?
Yeah, most definitely. And like you say, they lost 2 games, and those 2 games were the first 2 games. You know, they lost to a penalty in the first game, and then obviously they lost to Juventus 2-1, also a Lukaku penalty. So, you know, then since then they've just picked up momentum and they've kept on going, and the belief definitely is growing. And it's funny, actually, like going into bars of a weekend, talking to locals, and they keep talking about Gigi Riva and the Scudetto 70. And I know. It's actually quite funny, but I don't think they've had anything to shout about for quite a long time. Obviously, it wasn't so long ago they were in Serie B, one promotion, and now they're looking towards the Champions League spot. And I think if they keep this, let's say, the first 11 fit, and the lads that are coming off the bench were, you know, again, nothing was expected of them. Like Jerry, he's not really given much of a chance. He's one of those that when he steps on the pitch, people are like in the stands, turning around, head in hands. Not again, kind of thing. But obviously, the two games against Samp in the week, the 96-minute winner, it's an incredible header, right? And, you know, if you're going to push for a top four place, you've got to have more than an 11. And again, the Ragazzo coming off the bench, a local lad, getting that draw, yeah, away at Sassuolo. It's a big thing. And if you've got these players that are going to step up and do it when they're perhaps not expected to do anything, that's going to play a big part in the end. A couple of injuries that they may struggle, but yeah, so far the lads on the bench are doing their thing as well.
Yeah, that's absolutely it, isn't it? And there's something quite special about it, the local guy doing it. Maybe this is one of the reasons why I like Atalanta and kind of fell for them. When I did, they have local players who generally play there, and you could see how much it meant to the whole Cagliari squad when Ragazzo got that goal. They were all on the pitch. And I know that happens quite often in Italy, but no, it was a really, really good thing. But anyway, Vito, I'm going to put you under a bit of pressure here. Give me a number, 1 to 20. Where are Cagliari finished in this season?
I'd go 5th.
Ooh.
I'll take that. I'm actually not so optimistic. I would say 7th. I think they may fall off.
You know what? I'm gonna join you on that, and I'm apologising, but I'm looking and I can see Roma and Atalanta definitely finishing ahead of them. So sorry, Sardinia, but if you guys prove me wrong, I'll be the first to hold my hands up and be happy for you. But anyway, let's go to the top of the table. Inter are still there, despite drawing with Roma in the first game of this weekend. And Vito, I thought it was quite impressive. Roma and Chris Maldini, the first team to stop Inter from scoring in Serie A this season.
Yeah, it's quite a fantastic achievement on Roma's part to do that, especially when you consider that partnership with Lukaku and Lautaro Martinez. They've been clicking and they've both been in superb form as individuals as well. If I look at the game in general, I thought it was a case of both defences were on top as opposed to the technical quality or the attacking quality being poor. I think both sides deserve praise for the defensive displays, and Smalling once again had another excellent game for the Giallorossi.
Yeah, well, we saw Brozovic and Lukaku both missed quite good chances or came very close, certainly for Inter in the first half. Ben, were you thinking that this was a big missed opportunity when Inter didn't really ramp up the pressure with a win on Friday?
I think in the grand scheme of things, maybe not, because I still think that Juve probably got a lot to give yet. I know Inter, you know, everyone's liking to say that this is a title race, and it is so far, and it's the most exciting probably that we've had in years. Napoli ran them close the other season, but yeah, I think obviously it's a big opportunity dropped on the day, but in the grand scheme of things, I don't think it's going to be as close as people are touting. I think that a couple of injuries, for example, if they lose Martinez or Lukaku, I think Lukaku's bought them a lot since he's coming from United. He's offering a different physical presence, something completely different. Bit of a talisman himself for Inter. And I just can't help but feel if they pick up a couple of injuries, then same story as for Cagliari. I think they may start to suffer. Whereas, obviously, everyone knows what Juve have in reserve.
Well, this is it, right? Inter are looking at bringing in Olivier Giroud. So they clearly want another presence up top. And Vito, Giroud wants to play more regular football. If he goes to Inter, he's probably still going to be second string. But we've seen him as being a guy who can impact games from the bench or as a back striker when he's given the opportunity. Is he someone that you could see helping Inter make that push for the Scudetto?
Giroud, I'm not so confident about him. Age is one thing, but also sometimes it might even be the tactical role as well. If he's there to be a backup to Lukaku, then I can't see him getting his wish of regular playing time. Perhaps he might be used more in the Coppa Italia or even in the Champions League, a bit like last season when Maurizio Sarri at Chelsea used him for Europa League matches. If he was going to play in the league, I wouldn't think he'd be utilised all that often anyway, unless, you know, I hope it doesn't happen, that Lukaku suffers an injury. But personally, I believe if Giroud's, if he's that focused on regular playing time, he'd be better off going somewhere other than Inter.
Lazio continued their good form and beat Juventus 3-1 at the Stadio Olimpico. Is it time that we stopped calling them inconsistent? Because, I mean, they're only 3 points behind Juve. They've got 33 from their 15 games. And Simone Inzaghi has finally got this squad performing above themselves again.
No, I mean, what have we got? Alberto on 11 assists and Immobile on 17 goals. So, they're both standouts, complete standouts in the league in terms of individual performances. So, they're racking up the goals and assists between the both of them. Plus, I think Milinkovic-Savic is coming into his own somewhat. You know, there's a lot of talk surrounding the guy, and he's been linked away with ridiculous big money moves, I think, to United. Last summer, I think it was touted as 90 million or something, and then kind of tailed off. People were saying, well, hang on, he's a bit of a one-season wonder, a bit of a hit-and-miss player, but, he's starting to click again, and obviously, being a Liverpool fan, it's good to see the ex-boys like Lucas as well putting in solid performances.
You've come in as a replacement for Kev just to keep our Liverpool quota up more than anything else, and our Lucas fan club still has a member. But no, Lucas is so important to that team, and he's someone that kind of gets overlooked because of the brilliance of Luis Alberto and Ciro Immobile and Milinkovic-Savic when he's on it. What was the biggest surprise in this game, Vito, that Ciro Immobile didn't even score and Lazio beat Juve 3-1?
It is surprising, and what was also surprising was that was probably his worst league performance for the season, and Lazio still managed to win. He had the chance to score from the penalty spot, but Wojciech Szczęsny made that double save, and his run has been stopped temporarily. If Lazio can get other wins without Immobile scoring or him still playing poorly, I think that's a positive sign for them going forward, because it shows that they don't always have to depend on one player scoring the goals. You look at the goal scorers. The first one was from Luis Felipe, who's a defender. Second goal was from Milinkovic-Savic, and an exquisite one too. And then the third one was Caicedo coming off the bench. But probably if Lazzari had more composure or placed his shot better, he probably could have got it on the first time instead of waiting for Caicedo to get the rebound. So a good signs for Inzaghi and Lazio if they are other scoring contributors.
Speaking of things that happened that we didn't necessarily expect, Ben, Juve went 1-0 up. Cristiano Ronaldo scored, looked to be another case of business as usual, but Juve had done to them what they've done to so many teams in the past. The game turned on its head. Juve aren't Juve anymore.
Well, yeah, that was me bigging them up, you know, a couple of minutes ago about squad depth and the mentality monsters of Juve. But no, absolutely. I think, I don't know if it's controversial, but I think what's going on with Cristiano at the moment is perhaps upsetting them a little bit. I think he's unhappy himself. Clearly, there have been a few situations of late where, you know, we've seen him strop, as he tends to do when things don't go his way. I'm just wondering if he's kind of upsetting the apple cart there a little bit, and if, because things aren't going his way, perhaps, you know, when he's not passed the ball, I think he tends to flap his arms around a bit and strop a bit. And I think I saw a stat actually that he's had like 5 shots per game average, which is like 2 or 3 more than the next player in Serie A. So, you know, he's shooting and not scoring. Ronaldo is usually competing with Messi for Ballon d'Or, is probably was never in contention this year. I think he was lucky to get third. So I don't know if that's part of the reason. They've got some serious players, of course, squad depth, but something's not right.
I don't know what you're talking about. Cristiano Ronaldo is the best player in Serie A. Did you not see this? I'm quite hesitant to even speak about this, given what happened to my Twitter notifications. my God. It's my most successful ever tweet, and I had to delete the Twitter app and not go on the website for five because I couldn't use Twitter without notification just going mad. But in what world, Vito, was Cristiano Ronaldo the best player in Serie A last year by helping Juve do what they had done seven times already, or by not being the top scorer in Serie A, or by not making the most? Am I missing something here?
To me, it's just nothing more than a PR stunt to give it to Cristiano Ronaldo. Call me biased, but that should have went to Fabio Quagliarella. Come on, 36 years old, scoring 26 goals in a, let's say, provincial club like Sampdoria. So what Quagliarella did was something out of the ordinary that year. And even in general terms, Ronaldo's campaign with Juventus scoring 19 goals was good, but nothing out of the ordinary. And by his standards, I think that was also pretty low. With what he's achieved throughout his career, Ronaldo, the bar has been set so high that getting 19 goals in a league season and then not doing a great deal in the Champions League, as Juventus ended up only reaching the quarterfinals, probably subpar compared to what we've become accustomed to from the Portuguese superstar.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you can make a list of the best 10 players in Serie A last season, and I don't think Cristiano Ronaldo would be. I think you'd have a couple from Atalanta, you'd have Quagliarella, a few from Lazio. Ronaldo winning that award seems quite bizarre to me. But Ben, what you were saying there, I think there were reports today being Monday, that Cristiano Ronaldo has told his Juve teammates, "Oh, if I was still in Madrid, I'd have won that Ballon d'Or," and some signs of unhappiness creeping in there. Are problems brewing?
I don't know. I wouldn't like to say. All I know is that, you know, that's Ronaldo in a nutshell, isn't it? I mean, love to hate him, hate to love him, whatever. It's like Vito said, he's a man that set standards with his numbers over the years, and quite simply didn't do that last season, and he's definitely not doing it this season. And Messi, I think, obviously is Messi. They've had this competition that's gone between them for many years now, but I think it's time to shoot that in the head and put it to bed, because you know, he's just not there anymore. I don't know if you guys saw it, but there's quite a hilarious video of Ronaldo's bloopers from recent games, where he's slashing shots out for throw-ins, falling over himself. And yeah, I don't know. I think the main problem with him is that he does set such high standards that when it's not going his way, I think his teammates are going to suffer as a consequence, because he's getting on their backs, as opposed to maybe thinking, well, hang on, I'm not quite where I was, and maybe I won't be again. Is it time to accept that? I don't know.
Yeah. Still wearing his headband as well, despite not having hair anywhere near long enough to warrant a headband. I mean, Vito, I'm looking at you. I think your hair is probably longer than Cristiano's at the moment, but
very quick.
Yeah. I don't know. It's a strange one. Anyway, next up, Atalanta finally got another home win. They've struggled since the stadium that people are calling a new stadium, despite just being a new stand, being reopened this season. But they fell behind twice to Hellas Verona, and they came back and got the 3 points in the 94th minute, thanks to Berragimcity. And Vito, we spoke about it with Cagliari, we'll have to say it about Atalanta. This is the type of fight and never say die attitude that gets teams places.
That's right. Atalanta, a team renowned for their scoring prowess, and they're not going to rest on their laurels, Atalanta. Even when things don't go their way, you'd still think they've got a few goals in them. Even if They're expected to concede more. They'll find a way to get on the score sheet themselves. Di Carmine got two goals for Hellas Verona, but Atalanta, they managed to get things in their way, and they got Vod to win. Not only that, for the winning goal, they had their three centre-backs combined for it. So that was staggering. I think that's typical of this Atalanta side and something you would expect from any team coached by Giampiero Gasperini anyway.
You know, you've taken the words right out of my mouth, because I was going to say, if ever there was an advert of a game for what Atalanta are, it was this one. Because the defenders were terrible at their job, but then they popped up at the other end with what was a really good move as well, right? Palomino slipped it into Toloi, who flicked it over the head of himself and the run of defence, and Jim Shitty got thumped it in on the volley. It was something that Papu, Ilicic and Muriel will be proud of. And Ben, Atalanta, Malinovsky became their 11th scorer this season. I think that's more than anyone else in Serie A. And that's exactly why they're where they are.
Yeah, well, like you say, when goals are coming from all over the place, you're not relying on one or two or three individuals, I think, as perhaps people thought Atalanta would do, maybe. Obviously, Duvan, you know, Muriel's doing bits as well. But when goals are coming from all over the place, I mean, A, you've got many options, and B, the opposition don't really know what to do with you. I mean, they can't really say, all right, let's stick two men on him, problem solved, because that's not going to happen, you know. Goals from midfield. When you got defenders flicking the ball over their own head, scoring goals like that, it's a sign of confidence that's flowing through the whole side, right? I think it's good. It's a good day for any would-be Atalanta fan.
Yeah, they're so good to watch. And sometimes I really wish I wasn't an Atalanta fan, right? So I could just watch them and enjoy it. Whereas when I watch them, it tends to be the most stressful procedure you will go through on a Sunday afternoon, right? It's unbelievable. It's unbearable. But then at the end, you just think, oh, this is amazing. Because more often than not, they come out on the right side of it. But as Vito has so kindly just pointed out, Rafa Toloi has four assists this season. He's a centre-back. And that one just kind of shows what they're all about. Because I think I've spoken about it on the podcast before. I've definitely written about it before. Is they've got this weird thing under Gasp of having, like, a rotating centre-back. So one of the centre-backs is always involved in the attacks because you've got the luxury of Freuler and Deron in front of them. And usually it's Deron, but Freuler can do it too. One of them always drops in and covers, meaning Palomino, Toloi, Jim Shitty, Maziello, whoever it is, can just under up the pitch and not have to worry about things. When you get that numerical advantage, you're bound to score more goals. And we saw them last season. They were the top scoring side in Serie A. They are the top scoring side in Serie A this season as well. And they don't look like stopping. And this, Vito, is without Duvan Zapata. He's been out for 2 months. And they're just still scoring.
Oh, it's really incredible. Guys, to show that Gasperini's really drilled and trained this team exceptionally well. And when you can score goals without your best forward, it makes you wonder how good Atalanta can be once Duvan Zapata is fully fit and firing. He had an incredible season in 2018-2019. So if they can get him ready at least for the second half of the season, it just will make Atalanta a much harder team to face. And you know, depending on how things go this week in the European fixtures, let's say, you know, worst case scenario, Atalanta, they finish bottom of the group. They can focus on Serie A, probably push for the Champions League again and take things from there. And, you know, I think in that case, Gasperini has a bit of a luxury because he doesn't have to rely on the same 11 for goals or the same starting 11 to keep performing well. He's got a bit of options that he can play around with depending on the fixtures and the quality of the opponents.
Well, Atalanta are now sixth on 28 points, just one behind both Roma and Cagliari, who occupy fourth and fifth place. They are seven points clear of Napoli in seventh. Things don't look like they're getting any better for them, Ben. They went 1-0 down against Udinese. They managed to get a draw, but I mean, it's not great, is it?
No, I mean, obviously with recent goings on there as well, I think it's well documented the fallings out between the players, the manager, and the powers that be at the club. I mean, I actually didn't see them this weekend, I must admit, but I watched them against Liverpool that last time out in the Champions League. And I think for them, it was a fantastic point on the night, that night. But you could see from the way they set up. I mean, they set up to get smashed, basically. They got the goal on the break, which was a bit dubious, which was definitely a foul on Van Dijk in the build-up. But then the rest of the game, they sat back with literally 10 behind the ball, and they never, ever looked like crossing the halfway line. The way things are going for them as well in the league at the moment, like you say, snatching draws. I don't know, at the start of the season, would you have said maybe that they were one of the sides to push Juve? If there would be a side to push Juve, but as it stands, I mean, no one's even talking about them really. You know, Cagliari have popped into the mix from the top four. You've got Atalanta, obviously Lazio flying, Roma or there or thereabouts, but Napoli seem to be they've seemed to have fallen by the wayside already. But, yeah,
it's still very early in the season too, but 7 points is a lot of ground to make up at that of the table. And you look at Atalanta, Roma, Lazio, I suppose we've got to say Cagliari as well. You can't see them dropping too many points, and Napoli then accumulating the maximum possible to overturn that. They will do very, very well to even get a European place this season, Ben.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I'm talking from a biased point of view here, Cagliari point of view, obviously. They have three tough fixtures after Christmas, which are Juve, Milan and Inter. But I think, you know, if Napoli can start to pick up points themselves in that period, then they've got a chance of catching up with the likes of Cagliari, who I said earlier, I think, will tail off. So it's not over yet. But as you say, 7 points is a big gap coming up to the Christmas break. And I think there will be changes made possibly in the near future. I'm not sure if it's going to be a managerial change, but something's got to give sooner or later, you know, because they've set, again, high standards for themselves in the last few seasons. And if they're hovering, you know, outside the Europa League places, it's not going to be pull up with for long.
No, absolutely not. We were going to move to the next place on the table, but before we get there, we'll talk about Bologna-Milan, because I was there. That was my second game on Sunday. Milan won 3-2. It was a good win, a big 3 points for them. But they were made to really cling on at the end. They should have been in that position. However, they were in complete control for most of the game, but they somehow managed to nearly throw this away. Christoph Piontek got the opener from the penalty spot. Then Theo Hernandez made it 2. Then Theo Hernandez scored an own goal. There was a lot of fun going on between Theo and the Bologna fans, by the way. Jack Bonaventura made it 3. And then Nicolo Sansone scored a penalty that was conceded by Theo Hernandez. And yeah, it was a cagey end. Vito, was this the most Milan way to make a convincing win, not end that convincingly?
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
the way Milan have been this season and in recent years, yeah, it's just rather, I wouldn't say perplexing. Previous results have been perplexing, but this particular performance, I think it just goes to show that clearly not the Milan of old. And although this is one of the better performances for the season, they still have this either lack of polish or this lack of ability to manage games better than what most other top sides in Italy would be able to. If I had to pinpoint individuals, for instance, I think Teo Hernandez, he had a real Jekyll and Hyde kind of game. Excellent offensively, but defensively he was a liability. So I think to some extent he summed up Milan in a nutshell. There are good points about this Milan team, most notably Giacomo Bonaventura. But of course, this team does have its share of flaws, and you know, it could be due to the squad quality overall, just individually certain players are not what we expect of AC Milan, especially considering they've had such an illustrious history.
Teo's going to be a lot of fun. When he scored his goal, he went over to the corner flag and did a salute to the Bologna fans, which they didn't take too kindly to. They were giving him serious abuse. And then, of course, what was it, 8 minutes later, he went and scored an own goal and no one knew who put the ball in the net. And then when they announced it as his name, which they don't often do, they'll usually just say a goal and credit it to the nearest home team player. But I think the guy knew what he was doing because he shouted out on goal, Teo Hernandez. Everyone lost their minds. It was one of the loudest eruptions of noise I've heard at stadium this season. It was unbelievable. Then when he went over halftime, they were giving him everything. They made the foul in the second half, and I think it's because it was him. They lost their heads a little bit more than they would have. And then the referee was almost forced to go and look at the pitch side monitor for VAR. And obviously, once you look at that, you've got to give the penalty because it was mindless. But yeah, for what he does on the pitch and his questionable defending, as well as his excellent prowess going forward, Teo's going to be fun to watch this season. So yeah, and have something about them. But Ben, can we focus on some positives? Because Milan are now, they've won back-to-back games. It's only the second time they've done that this season. But winning at Parma, who are doing okay this season, and then winning at Bologna, two big wins.
Yeah, most definitely. Talking about Teo and talking about Milan, I think he's their joint top scorer this season, right?
Which he is.
which says something. Obviously, Piatek is not firing on all cylinders. People starting to question why. Again, was he a one-season wonder? What's going on? Yeah, two big wins for Milan, though. And I think now if they can start to put together points slowly, then they'll start to climb. But again, I can't see them challenging for a top four place. They're a long way off, you know. The football they're playing is quite laboured at times. But yeah, I mean, you know, regardless, they've just got to keep on plugging away. They've just got to keep on plugging away.
This is it. They've got 20 points. So they're only 1 point behind both Napoli and Parma, but they're 9 off the Champions League spot. So you'd got to think that it's a bridge too far for them this season. But who knows? Football's weird, right? Strange things do happen. But so something that's not so strange was Giacomo Bonaventura being amazing again. And I wrote about him and Teo and Piontek actually in my analysis thing, which went up on Monday morning, so go read that. But Bonaventura is huge for Milan, and he was kind of forgotten about, and I hate this saying, but is he like a new signing for them coming into January?
He is like a new signing for them, and I'm going to make the bold statement and say that without Bonaventura, you don't really have AC Milan. I feel that with him, you'll get a few extra positions up the table with him. I just see that whenever he's fit and in his best form, Milan are a better side with him in the team. He, you know, takes a bit of pressure off Suso and Calhanoglu to try and create something. He's a bit more experienced than those two. And Yeah, he's both a creator and a scorer, so he offers many different characteristics to the Milan midfield. If he can continue this form, then Milan will keep climbing up, in my opinion. If he unfortunately suffers another injury, then Milan will go back to struggling again, and then Milan fans and even the media will probably try and find new scapegoats if they're not already criticising the likes of Suso, Çalhanoğlu, Musakil, Ricardo Rodriguez, and whoever they like to criticise too.
Some love for Suso. The pass, oh my God, the pass he played for Teo's goal. Phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal. If you've not seen it, go check that out, as well as checking out Atalanta's third goal. Quick note on Bologna. They're defensively terrible, like really, really terrible. When Mihailovic took over, the attack was the problem. What was it last season? They went 6 or 7 games before they got the first goal. Mihailovic kind of sorted that bit out. They're not too bad when they've got the ball, but when they don't, trouble. Okay, moving on. Sampdoria lost 1-0 to Parma. Juraj Kuchka scored. Vito. Parma are an all right side this season, I suppose, and Sampdoria aren't what they were.
No, unfortunately. Credit must be given to Parma for playing a rather good defensive game, to be honest. Probably early on, before they scored, they were probably the ones that were attacking a bit more. But afterwards, they were happy to shut up shop. They probably only had 2 decent scoring chances afterwards. But I think seeing the way Samp were building their attacks, they were able to tighten things at the back. And I know you've criticised Luigi Seppe a few times on this pod, but he probably had one of his best games in a Parma jersey. He made some fine saves from Ronaldo Vieira, Omar Colley, and a couple others that are not springing to mind now, but he was really on his game for a change. And then, of course, he saved the penalty from Quagliarella. So, clear wasn't Samp's day, but Roberto D'Aversa, once again, is doing a fantastic job with the players that he has at his disposal.
I maintain Seppe can be a good shot stopper, but it's expectation that lets him down. When you don't expect him to do something, he does it. When you expect him to do something, he very much doesn't. So that's my thing with him. But anyway, Torino beat Fiorentina 2-1. Ben, not really a surprise. Fiorentina aren't very good.
Not really, not at all, actually. I think, like I mentioned to you guys before we got going, football in the 90s, nostalgia here. Fiorentina were one of the sides that you could pretty much chalk up as being one of the best every season without fail. So to see their decline and the fact that it's not a surprise is very disappointing. Yeah. Where are they? They're sitting 13th in the table and only 5 points off relegation themselves. So with some big games coming up next time around, below them, I think, is Samp Genoa, right? So one of those sides is likely to pick up points. And then we've got, is it Spal Lecce as well? So, there's going to be movement from below them. So if they don't start looking behind them, then they could soon see themselves dragged into that. And again, I don't want to talk too early about relegation, but like you said before, Napoli 7 points behind at this time. 6 points ahead of the relegation zone at this time for Argentina is also not a comfortable situation to be in.
Absolutely. And like you said, Brescia host Lecce this weekend. And I think I'm going to that because it's quite a big game down there. One of them will pick up, they'll both pick up at least a point, right? Genoa Samp as well. And Fiorentina are playing in. That is not the team you want to see coming to town when you are struggling like this. Big, big problems there. Lecce did play Genoa, Vito, and they got a 2-2 draw. I'm sure this was something that pleased you greatly, given everything that's going on and people know your allegiances.
It was a rather exciting game, Lecce Genoa. Just the way the momentum would swing was unbelievable. Scary to think that Genoa could have been 3-0 up if Kevin Ogudelo had buried a chance in the second half, but then Lecce managed to change the momentum, especially through Filippo Falco, who had an excellent game when he came on. involving both goals, including the first goal, which was an excellent curling shot. But yeah, to see both Goran Pandev and Agudelo receive those red cards, that really affected Genoa. Lecce, they're the kind of team, they will, if they come out of the defensive shell, they can play some football when they want to. And they were probably unfortunate not to get the win themselves. Speaking of the derby, I think this is great for Sampdoria because they're missing two players who are important to them. Even Agudelo, he's young, but under Motta, he has played quite well for the Grifone. So I think those sending offs alone, some can take confidence in that. But at the end of the day, the Blue Chiriati got to look at themselves and try to utilise their own strengths, not just pounce on any flaws that Genoa have.
No, for sure. You got to think the derby's come at the perfect time, right? If they win that, they go into Christmas, a couple more games coming up, could go in on a real high and then reevaluate in the quick break and make a charge up the table then. Because as we kind of jokingly said, it's quite a good squad. They shouldn't be where they are, but here we are. You look below that, Genoa now 18th, Brescia in 19th after beating Spal 1-0 in Ferrara, and Andrea Patania missed the 75th minute penalty. Painful. I need to pop down to Ferrara again to see what's going on there. But a huge win for Brescia. Ben, Mario Balotelli on the score sheet.
Well, yeah, and it's his 50th. It was his 50th Serie A goal as well. And I think if you look at Brescia and you look at them surviving, I think you're looking towards Mario to pick up the vital goals in the big games. And if they have these games where they have a chance of snatching a 1-0 defeat or, you know, scraping a result, I think you're looking at Mario himself to do things at the business end of the pitch. Yeah. So fantastic result for them when I think most people write them off on a weekly basis. So
yeah, for sure, right? Because when they came up, people thought, it's just Balotelli. I still do think that. But Donnarumma's quite good when he plays. But Vito, how big is it that Eugenio Corini's back on the bench? Because, I mean, Fabio Grosso's time on the bench was a disaster. What, 4 games, no goals, 10 conceded? And Corini hadn't done a bad job before he was dismissed.
No, I thought he was doing a decent enough job. And if you were going to sack him for another coach, Brescia needed someone with more experience and quality than Fabio Grosso. I still think Grosso needs more time in Serie B to polish his tactics and develop a greater CV and reputation in coaching. Corini seems to be well-liked by the Brescia fans, especially being a local boy. And now that he's back, I think Cellino should try and stick with him as much as they can. And ultimately, I think it's more squad that needs to be addressed more than any sort of coaching issues.
Yeah, it does seem right. After the derby defeat against Atalanta, I think I mentioned last week, the Curva were singing Perini's name, so they made it quite clear they wanted him back. And Rosso, I mean, dropped back down to Serie B, get another job there, I think is probably the best thing for him to build his CV. Anyway, guys, we've made it to the end. Ben, a successful debut. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
We've got Cagliari at Lazio Cagliari, I can't remember which way, next week. So we might be in touch one way or another. We'll get your voice back on the podcast very, very soon. Vito, as always, it's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Connor.
Is your team of the week done and dusted?
Yes, it is. Yes, it's on the website now. Probably need to share it a bit more on social media, especially Instagram and Twitter. But yeah, another quick note on the Lazio game. I was saying this to one of my followers on Facebook. I picked 3 Lazio players, but they were probably that good. I would have been tempted to put 5 if that was acceptable because they played that well. Manuel Lazzarini and Lucas Leiva were a bit unlucky to miss out. But have a look at the team. Give me your thoughts, everyone. Criticism, praise, either way. More than happy to hear your 2 cents. Within reason, of course.
Criticism's always welcome within reason. Absolutely. All right, guys. We'll wrap it up there. everyone listening, head over to fourthitalianfootball.com. In the meanwhile, Champions League games this week, some big ones. We'll have pieces on those, obviously, coverage, analysis, whatever you like. And then we're back with more hashtag FAF at the games next weekend. I'll be at a stadium. If Cali are at home, Ben will be at a stadium and we'll be all over the place. There you go. And it's a big one. So be sure to head over, get Ben on Twitter and Instagram and all the rest of it as well. You'll see a clicky thing to his profile on at Serie A FFC. All right, goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Fritti, scampi e chianti, calamari, Luca sei per me numero uno. Cannoloni, lucacioni, pepperoni, Luca sei per me numero uno. Bella donna, mamma mia, alimento, ciao a Roma, Roma, Ribéry, amore mio. Mozzarella, mortadella, Nutella, Luca sei per me numero uno.
Stand by for action.
Speciale, cozze vongole,
prego.
Foto di panini, chic e Lamborghini, Luca, Toni, Christ, milioni, tortellini, cappuccini con martini, Luca sei per me numero uno. Luca, Toni, telefoni, Berlusconi, chiama qui per te numero uno.
Welcome to the news of the week.
Colè, Roma, come dire con la pescola piccolo? No! Monaco di Bavaria, secolo, campioni del mondo! No! Ausgeschide, no! Che bello, no! Allora, che bello!
Oh!
Tortellini, cappuccini con martini, Luca sei per me numero uno. Luca, Toni, telefoni, Berlusconi, chiama qui per te numero uno. Bella donna, mamma mia, alimenti, ciao a Roma, Roma, Ribéry, amore mio. Schmazzare, fil ballare, calcio di mondiale, ma per me numero uno, numero uno, numero uno.
Game over.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.